Time to show the world that top is what I strive for. Greatness is a journey I'm willing to strive for. Consistency is key and I don't take no time off. Against the odds, I put it all on the line for. A lesson learned for every flaw I'm gonna make. Consequence I undertake, putting all my trust in fate. Failure won't become my fate. 10 toes down, I never fold. Give it all to reach my goal. As my name is stone, when my story's told. Say I did it for
How's your launch plan going?
It is in a holding pattern right now. So, like, I was thinking about doing it this week, but I'm also launching my, like, second cohort of the boot camp. Well, everything got pushed. I was going to launch my second cohort of the boot camp this week, too. Like, just announce it, maybe not launch it. And then that became more what I wanted it to be. And, like, it's technically done. There's just a couple things I want to tweak on it, and I'm feeling this pressure to like put it out today, and I'm like, I don't need to do that. So I think I'm going to do it Monday instead and give myself the weekend to like polish things up a little bit. And then that'll push the launch to on Product Hunt maybe next week to the following week. I don't know, dude. I'm just nervous about it, probably for no reason, because like I want it to go well, because like if it goes well, I can get, you know, hundreds of subscribers. But if it like – it feels like you got one shot, you know? Yeah. So – I'll probably be bending your ear for some advice, and any help you've got is appreciated.
Yeah, happy to help. So did you do some research? So because I never
looked into... Yeah, I did some research, a little bit of article reading, but nothing too in depth. I'm wondering how much weight I need to put on like finding like a hunter or something, or if that even matters.
I mean, of course it helps a little bit, because when you have a big hunter, then the people get a ping, but right. I don't know how many people really care about these pings, because everyone is following, like, I don't know, thousands of people. So at least I only follow 200 people, and even I don't really care about these pings. So, and I never cared about it, and all of my products ended up on the front page. And this is, I think, what's the most important thing. So if you're on the first spot, on the second spot, whatever, at least in my opinion, doesn't really matter. Of course, it's better. But as long as you're on the front page, you get the exposure that you want.
Yep.
And yeah, people will see it.
Yeah, I've heard like top five is sort of like, if you're in the top five, anything else doesn't really matter. And I've got quite a big list. So I imagine if I like push, like, hey, I'm launching on Product Hunt. The question is, I don't know how many of those people are on Product Hunt, but at least some of them I'm sure are. So yeah, I think I've got an advantage there, but we shall see.
Yeah. And as I said, I think you really only need five or so upvotes within the first hour. And this is not too hard. And once you achieve this, you're on the front page. And then, yeah, the organic part takes over. And it's a real competition. And of course, it heavily depends on who also launches on the same date.
Right.
So if, I don't know, yeah, some big company publishes something really amazing, you have zero chance.
Yeah, that's okay. Yeah, man, I'm excited for it though. I think that I just need to get it out there and be done with it.
Yeah. So did you do research on other newsletters that launched on Product Hunt?
Well, like newsletters similar to mine, I mean, most of them aren't active still, with just like ideas and stuff. And those usually do pretty good. And my assumption is that like, by the very nature, like Product Hunt is a place where people go for ideas. It's a free offering, right? And I'm just giving this stuff away. And it's super easy and applicable to like everybody. So like, I think it is the perfect product for Product Hunt in that sense, where it's like, oh, you know,
why not?
Why exactly? Why not? I'll try this. So I do think that there's a lot of like elements to it already that could make it successful.
Yeah. So I would bet on that. So I would be very optimistic that it works.
I appreciate that. Your good vibe will carry me through.
So did you prepare any ideas, or should we talk about my ideas? Should we mix? So I'm really flexible.
Yeah, cool, man. I've got two ideas that I think are worth talking about. And so if you want me to just start them off, we can. If you want to like take turns, I'm also open, but that's what I've got in my back pocket.
Okay. Yeah, maybe I want to start this time, because it's an idea I'm toying with myself. So it's not an idea I just want to put out there, but something I'm actually personally interested in myself. And So I thought a lot about a few of the things you told me the last two times we talked. And the two puzzle pieces you mentioned were that on the one hand, that there are quite a few of these newsletters that do what you do, what I do, what many people do, which I would say live in the opportunities as a service space, right? So this is how I would categorize them. And most of them not doing very well. So most of them are stagnating. And you mentioned like you reached out to a couple guys and you were shocked to find out that they are after 20 posts or whatever at 200, 500 subscribers, right? And most give up, all these problems. And on the other hand, of course, you have like the big winners. You have a few players who do things very similar, but end up with not only thousands of subscribers, but also thousands in revenue. So really 30K, 10K are not unusual for the big guys. Kevin Conti, Drew Riley, Trends.co. Mm-hmm. And so I of course then started to wonder, because your description fits my newsletter fairly well. So it's still very small. And what are the reasons? And you mentioned, of course, that distribution is often the biggest problem. So most of the people are good at writing, they're putting out good content, but they are not good at distributing. And yeah, I'm not sure if this is the only issue, but because I think there's also the other opposite, that there are people who are just good at marketing, but there's no real substance. So
yeah, you'd be like, at least like there's a threshold that you need to hit for both of them, right? Like you need to be a good enough writer and you need to be a good enough marketer. And then if you're even better at one or the other, it can sort of like help the other one sort of work out. Yeah.
Exactly. And so this was the first puzzle piece that you mentioned that got my gears going. And the second puzzle piece was that you mentioned that there is lots of cool stuff that I can do or I should do with my data, right? You mentioned this idea of products with bad rating where you can say, okay, this is not so this kind of stuff. And I probably also mentioned that it's my plan this year to upgrade my products a little bit, to unbundle what I currently have and restructure my portfolio in order to make it more useful, more valuable. And I want to focus on specific use cases. And one of the use cases for my data products is certainly this product ideas part. And I already have a product ideas newsletter. It's not big, but it's okay. And it's slowly growing. And on the other hand, I have these data products and I want to somehow incorporate it. And this is when I started thinking. And now my crazy idea, after this very long preamble, I started to wonder, because the problem really seems to be that, first of all, people burn out. And on the other hand, they don't see the growth they should be seeing, given what they put out. And my idea was, what if a few of these people join forces?
Yeah, I think it's super smart. So like the everything bundle that they did on like...
Exactly. And I find it so strange that in this indie maker world, everyone is fighting their own little fight. And it's very rare that people really join forces. So what sometimes happen is that there's a collab. So two people maybe make this kind of mini tool together. Okay, this certainly exists. Sometimes it's not very common, but it exists. But I find it very strange. And I actually have no idea why no one is doing this. So maybe I'm missing something obvious. But as I thought about these issues and also where I want to be in a few months, I ended up with, okay, this is what I should try, because you probably know this article from the Every Bundle guy, Nathan Bashu, where he talks about this bundle magic, right?
I haven't read that one particularly.
Yeah, it's great. He makes these little examples. There are five people and each of them has a certain preference for a given newsletter, right? Person A says, this newsletter is $50 per month, whereas this one is $2 and the other $0 for me. And everyone has like their personal preference. And then like with this bundle, you can capture more value, provide something better for everyone. And it sounds very smart. And of course, there are many ways how someone could pull this off. So of course, one possibility is exactly this bundle idea. But then you have the problem, I think, that people get bombarded already with content. So more is probably not the way to go, but better is interesting. So what I think would be interesting is not like, creating this kind of bundle. I think it could be interesting, because let alone that each of the guys who join would no longer just do marketing for themselves, but actually for the whole thing. And then you can really get kind of a flywheel going, because it would become very quickly probably too big to be ignored. So if everyone has their own little newsletter with 300, 500 subscribers, no one cares. But if, I don't know, three guys or whatever join forces, you suddenly have like something much bigger and people, I think, would start talking about it.
Yeah, I think that's super interesting. I've thought about this too, not nearly as in depth though, because it's like, oh, this makes a lot of sense from the best way to, like they do this shit in YouTube channels all the time, at least like back in the day, right? They'll do the cross promotion, right? So I'm gonna invite X onto my channel and now our audience sort of cross pollinate and like we both win as an outcome, right? So I think that's super interesting. I mean, there's a few challenges that I think come to mind, and I don't know if these are like deal breakers, but if we're just like riffing on this, I think the one is like you had mentioned it already, like, right? Like, is more content better, or is it just that it needs to be like the right kind of content for the right type of person? I think if you can solve that puzzle, that's probably the biggest deal. The second are finding people who are in the same like league, right? Where it's like, we're all relatively small and like getting them to mass together, and then nobody feels like they're adding more to the plate than somebody else, because then it's like, well, what's my incentive for doing this? Because ultimately my tide's going to raise your boat, but like, I don't know if I'm going to feel the same sort of reciprocity, not from like a, you know, super cynical standpoint, but I just think that's the way people are. It's like, what's in it for me? And then I wonder, this is maybe the last thing I'm thinking about, is if like, what happens if somebody does end up blowing up, right? And they end up, like, let's say everybody starts out on the same playing field. I don't know if this happened with the Everything Bundle, but maybe it didn't. But like, who's bringing the lion's share of audience, and if they're going to feel slighted, right? Where it's like, oh, well, I'm the rock star here that's helping everybody else. So it can either happen on the front end, right, where somebody feels that way to begin with, or on the back end where it's all said and done. It's like, I'm growing exponentially and shit's working for me. This just doesn't make sense for me anymore. I'm kind of going to dip. But that's the hater in me being like, this is why this is hard. Here's why I love the idea, right? I think that it makes so much sense to your point where it's like, we have all of these creators who are all like working with each other already, like you and I, right? Like, we met on Twitter, we're hanging out, we're like talking about our stuff. I've gotten subscribers from just being on this podcast. I want to start doing what you're doing and like promoting your stuff too. And like getting this whole flywheel churning of like, oh, we're all just buddies hanging out doing this thing. I see this happen all the time with like the Jack Butcher. Dude, I don't like, once I heard his name the first time, I swear to God, in the next month, I heard his name probably 50 times. He was like everywhere, right? And it's like this circle of friends that just start like promoting each other aggressively. And he was like the most acute example of this, but this happens with like Sam and Sean, and they've got a friend like Suli who gets promoted all the time. And then there's another guy named, like, I think his name's Neville. And I ended up like joining his copywriting course because they're talking about him all the time. And I'm like, oh, right. You guys are all like in the same circle because you're friends and you're just like promoting the shit out of each other. So that was my long-winded version of saying like that should exist for people who aren't quite at their level, right? Like they're at a few levels ahead, but the same thing could happen with smaller people, and that's how you get to the next level.
Yeah, so this is also one of my pet peeves that I've been thinking about a lot, like creating these little mafias where you secretly push each other and it absolutely works. And it's also astonishing that no one is doing it in a more systematic way, or maybe people are doing it and I'm just not aware of that, but that's also definitely something we're thinking about. So for example, I talked to Rob Sullivan, maybe you have him on your list. He's writing, it's Under the Radar. Do you know his newsletter? Oh yeah. It's really, really good. So, and he's doing it for quite a while. He's published more than 30 issues so far. Nice. And he's focusing on trends in general, search trends and social trends, but it's a Substack newsletter. And he has his own algorithm. He really finds cool trends early and is really good at what he's doing. He's also a good writer. And I talked to him and he shared his numbers. And I was shocked. I was absolutely shocked, to be honest. So I'm not sure if I can share it publicly.
Dude, that's how so many of them are though. It's like you reach out, like you get content. And then they'll be transparent with you, like, yeah, here's where I'm at. And I'm like, damn. And then when I dig a little bit further, I find out that they're really not doing much for marketing. I don't know if that's the case with him. But like, dude, you've done the hard thing, producing something awesome. Go share it, spread the
word. So, and this is like the one example, one of the guys I want to have on my team because there's so much potential. If just like picking the best of his stuff, and he's like capturing the whole trends research space, which is like super important if you want to create opportunity as a service content. And he's like an amazing expert. And yeah, I talked to him and he would be interested. So he's definitely interested. And so my whole thing is like this data analysis of marketplaces you can do. You can analyze something I just as a test I did today is analyze what is selling, for example, on AppSumo. And you can learn a lot because it's often very hard to understand if you're just looking at software. You don't get much information. But if someone's offering their software, whatever, at AppSumo, you get more data. And that's really cool because then you can look a little bit behind. And some of the deals make insane numbers. So the winners really make, I don't know, $500,000 on AppSumo, which is insane in 30 days, right?
So. Yeah. You look at that, it's pretty wild. And I've heard some horror stories from that, but like in general, right? Because like we were going to list one of our products at one point on AppSumo, and it's sort of a pain in the ass to set up. Like it really was. But yeah, we did a little bit of research on that. It is pretty fascinating how much money some of these people make from just offering like a really sick deal and then like using AppSumo as their marketing engine, right? And AppSumo is only still doing like lifetime deals, right? Like that's sort of their stick.
Or not only, but the majority lifetime.
Oh, got it. Okay. So you can do others, but got it. Okay. That makes sense. Yeah. That's interesting.
Yeah. And we can definitely talk about that later because I have a few ideas that came from this research. But as I said, I really just did this as a test. Like if I would start this kind of collective, what could I bring to the table? And I think this is what I would do. These marketplace deep dives, understanding what's selling, getting revenue estimates, using my scraping stuff, and also looking at gaps in the market, which you can identify using exactly the same techniques. And then if you can get maybe one or two further writers on board who fill in other gaps, like someone does in down market opportunities or pain point analysis, for example, using the framework you provided with MTurk, or someone who's writing emerging industry reports. There are many, many possibilities for content, but yeah, if you combine them, I think you could create something that's a lot more interesting and valuable compared to everything that exists currently. That's honestly my opinion. And this is why I think there's currently a huge opportunity to do this and why I'm super excited. I want to try it and I wanted to hear your opinion.
Yeah, seriously, I'm a big fan. I think you should do it. I tend to agree that I think that a lot of people are sort of existing in their own bubble. And I don't know. I view competition in this space as very fluid. And like, why aren't we just sharing readers? Because they're all going to like the same stuff, right? Now I get the difference being like, depending on what your business model is. And like, there can be content overload. And I think people are naturally going to go wherever they like it the most. Those are all totally fair critiques. But in general, like, I think that if you're producing really awesome content, the people who consume it are just going to consume all of it. So there's no sense in being like tribal about your readership.
Yeah. Okay. Then let's move on to the first of your ideas.
So first idea I've got is, this one's kind of interesting. It's niche. It's not like tech related really, but the tattoo industry. So I'm going to start here. In my opinion, is one of like the most busted customer service industries I've ever been a part of. So like I have a tattoo, right? So like I've been through this and dude, it was a pain in the ass to get this thing done. Like weirdly hard, okay? And I think this is known, like for anybody who's gotten a tattoo, I know that I'm not the first person who's been like, what is going on with this industry? Like, why is it so hard to do anything, right? So there's so many opportunities and I will pinpoint one, but I'm just going to give everybody the full gamut of like the process I went through to get a tattoo, because there's so many like sub ideas that could branch off of this. All right. So I think this is the process that most people take, because I consulted a lot of my friends who have tattoos and I was asking them like, what do I do here? Right. So the first thing I did was I went to Instagram and I just started like searching like either stylistically a hashtag of tattoo that I liked, or just like tattoo in general, right? And just started to get my own personal preference, right? So like, if you don't have a tattoo, and like in my opinion, you should probably find a tattoo artist that A, not only you like their like designs and style, but also, you know, like they seem like they do good work. It's consistent. Like, so there's a stylistic thing plus a quality thing that you need to sort of match up, and that, you know, doesn't fit everybody. So there was a specific style that I wanted that like it felt kind of hard to get and whatever. But I found a few people, and I live in Denver. So it's not like a crazy big city, but it's like a city for sure. Right. And like tattoos in Denver sort of go hand in hand. So there's tons of tattoo artists and shops here. So I narrowed it down, found a few artists that I liked, and like everything that we were doing was done through like Instagram DMs, which to me felt super weird. So it was like, he's like, no, just DM me. So like, we're going back and forth. And like, they would take days to get back to me. And the place where I found the biggest pain point, I was like, well, I have an idea for a design and I'm not an artist, which most people who get tattoos aren't, right? So it's like, I can't just like literally draw this thing for you. I'm trying to like describe to you what it's like and all of this. And a shocking number of times, the tattoo artists were super like, just give me something to go off of and I'll make my own thing, right? Like, give me like three sentences and then I'll just go build it. I'm like, you're good, dude. But like, no, I want a particular thing, right? Like, this is going to be on my body forever. So like, I respect your art and I'm sure you're going to do an amazing job, but I don't want you to just like freehand this, right? And it got so like to the point where like some people were like, I don't send you the design before the day of the tattoo, and then we can spend an hour like tweaking it and things like that, right? And I just couldn't. I was like, there's no shot that I'm ever going to be comfortable using that process, because like the anxiety that it induces in me is just unreal, right? This was not uncommon. Like, this happened to me multiple times, and it was insanely frustrating to the point where people were like messaging me, like the tattoo artist, and like getting mad at me for being too particular. And like, I was really trying to not be. So anyway, I'm going off on this tangent. I'm getting a little ranty, but it's not customer service focused. I think the tattoo artist had this sort of like, dude, you're coming to me. Like, I am gracing your body with my art. Like, you should be lucky. And I felt the exact opposite. Like, no, you're lucky that I will be your canvas. You gotta like, you know, I'm paying you money. So what I ended up doing, this was the solution I used. I went on and I found like a tattoo design service. They don't do the tattoos. They will just make the design. And I went through that route. The website was garbage. Like, actually looked like it was made in like 2010 and never been touched. Like, it was not a slick experience. Like, it worked. I will say that the output was fine. Like, I was happy with it. But I think there's a huge opportunity to dominate like the tattoo design like niche. And you're not doing the tattoos. You're just designing them. And it's all done digitally. You're just going back and forth with an artist. You can hire somebody on Fiverr to do this, right? Like, you can go on Fiverr and that's how you source your artists, and you just put like a really sick brand on top of it. I think that's a really easy win, because like, there's not a ton of them out there right now. And the ones that do exist look really shitty. Like I did not trust them going into it. And had I found something that looked a little bit more slick, I would have went with that every single time. So anyway, that's my like rant / idea that I think somebody should totally pursue. And I also think that like people getting tattoos is not going away. Like, it's a growing sort of thing. And I know that there are people out there that are going to be like, dude, I'm not going to just wing it on tattoo day. Like, I want to know what I'm going to get before we do this.
Right.
So yeah, I think you could bootstrap that thing super easy. Like, you don't even need to be super technical. Like, yeah. You just find a sick webflow template and then add some like custom sort of functionality to make sure that your artists and whatever can communicate, like, you're done.
That's super fascinating, because it's a world I know nothing about. I don't have a tattoo. And so of course I don't know what the process looks like.
It was shocking to me as somebody who comes from like the business world. And like, I'm always thinking about like, you know, you're sort of like, as a business, which a tattoo shop is, it's like, you're trying to maximize revenue and like thinking about what's the customer experience here and all this stuff. It was bad. And now I will say that I had great experiences with some tattoo artists. So I don't want to like slander the whole industry at all. The dude I ended up going with was great, like super easy to work with, all of that. The one thing that I had heard when I was doing this, that some people like on Reddit and other places were like, if you, like some tattoo artists won't do like a design that you bring to them. They will only do their work. And like, they made it sound like it was like the majority. In my experience, almost every single tattoo artist that I was like, hey, I've got this design and sent it to them, they were like, cool, like, I can do that. They did not care, right? I think so long as you can prove that it's not just like a copy of somebody else's work, that it's like actual original art, and they're not just ripping off another tattoo artist, they're cool. Like, they're like, oh yeah, I can totally do that. And they can even put their own flair on it if you want, which is bonus points. But if you've got 90% of it done, I'm cool with you like freehanding the last 10 and making it cool. That's no problem.
Right. So that's really fascinating, because I know that tattoos are a big thing and getting more popular. So, yeah. And what you're describing sounds as it hasn't reached like the present. It's still living in the past. And of course, the past is not 1980, but 2010, but still, it's still the past. So yeah, if that's really the case, that's definitely something you can make a lot of money. And I don't think it's as small as you make it, because tattoos are huge. Every other person has a tattoo nowadays. And
for real, like all my friends have tattoos. Like I just like jumped into the tattoo game, and like, you know, I'm like 27, so I'm not like super young, but I have known of a few startups that have been trying to like change this industry, and like known them closely enough that like they've kind of given me a little bit of the backstory. And the general consensus is that it's very, very hard to change the like cultural nature of this like tattoo industry, and that like right now it's super not easy to like, you have to call to book an appointment. Like you can't just see when people are available. There's like so many like sort of antiquated systems that are in place, like the Instagram DMing, like let's just DM on Instagram. I'm like, this seems super inefficient. Like, why can't I just call you and like just talk to you? Especially because I'm about to drop, like my tattoo cost me like $1,500. Like we're not talking about like a $50 purchase here. It's like, you know, this is meaningful to you. It's like, this is worth your time to do this. You make a lot of money. So I think that there is a like a high touch nature to this that, you know, could exist, but right now it just feels very broken.
Yeah. And especially there are many, many problems you can solve. It's like you said, it's the communication, the sales process. It's also just, if you want to start simple, create a productized service for these designs that are a bit more trustworthy what currently exists.
Even like, I don't know, even like a VA service for tattoo artists, right? Where like you just hook them up with an assistant. Because here's the other problem is that I recognize that most times it's like, I do think for to a certain degree, like tattoos kind of become this, if you're like the most badass, you're just inundated with clients and you're like, I literally can't service all of you, right? So like, it's not uncommon to be put on like a year wait list or something. Yeah, that happens all the time. And I didn't know this either, right? I'm like, oh, you're probably just ripping these things out. I mean, there's huge price differences, right? Like you can get somebody who will do it for $50 an hour. And like, you know, my dude was like $300 an hour. And there was another dude that I contacted who was $1,500 an hour, right? So like the price gap here is crazy. It's not transparent. I had no clue. And you're like, so what I'm saying is that like to help these people manage their own businesses, like even if you just hook them up with a VA who just knew how to like book clients and like get information from point A to point B, because I would spend so much time like DMing people just to find out that they're like, oh, well, by the way, I charge $500 an hour. I'm like, well, that's not what I don't want to pay that much for this. So, you know, the whole thing, like it just felt very strange to me. So that's my like slew of ideas. But the one that I really like is just doing this like custom tattoo design. I think it's super smart.
Yeah, that's definitely a great opportunity.
Yeah, I may write about that one. So like, we'll see. I mean, feel free to share it obviously, but like, that's how interested I'm in it. Like, I think there's something here to this.
I agree, yeah.
To pull off too. Yeah, that's the first one. Do you want to talk about the second one?
Maybe a short tangent so you can think about the next one or whatever, because you mentioned Reddit and you know that Clubhouse is all the rage. So first of all, of course, what's your opinion? Beer or bullish?
I don't know. Like, so I'm on Clubhouse. I've never hosted a room or anything. I've jumped into a few. I don't think that I'm going to be a long-term user. I don't want to like, okay, you know what? That's not fun. I will say, I don't think it's going to work. I just don't. I think it has too many problems. Like one, somebody, I think it was you tweeted about this and you made a really good point. You were like, Clubhouse is like unedited, complete stream of conscious. It's just like, here we go, we're just going to talk. Podcasts have like a little bit of editing and there's like a structure and like, here's what we're going to talk about. And then you have like audiobooks, which are super edited and like, these are the best ideas. And it has been whittled down in an extreme way. So just based on that framework, it's like, yeah, there's so much fluff on Clubhouse where people are just talking about just stuff. And they just feel like they need to be talking for this like period of time for 2 hours. It's hard to be interesting for that long, right? Like, and like continually say good things. So that I think is a huge problem. And then somebody else mentioned this too that I hadn't really thought about, but like the very nature of it, it's like none of the content's evergreen, right? It's like always live. And like, this was a problem. So we had this problem, we were doing influencer marketing with like Twitch and like, it's different. It, like I'm talking about the problem in a different way, but like for Twitch, like everything's done live. And when I was running an influencer marketing business on Twitch, and the problem with advertisers are like, well, they do the shout out and it's like only the concurrent viewers hear this. There's no like longevity to this content. Now you've just said the thing, it's gone now, right? So like the only way it makes sense for me is if I'm like on their stream 24/7, like on overlay or whatever. And I think similarly though, as an audience or somebody who can consume content, it's like, I don't get evergreen content from Clubhouse. It's just like whatever's in the moment, right? It's like, I just have to like hit the right thing and hope that it's good. And if it's not, it's like, I have no opportunity to like leave and like go find something else that was cool from 2 days ago. So anyway, I don't think it's going to work. Like I've been on it a few times and I'm already like, I haven't visited it in a week.
Yeah, I totally agree. And like every time I open it, there's nothing interesting going on. And even if there is a room where I think, oh, this could be interesting, I open it and I simply don't understand what's going on because they have been talking for an hour already at this point. Right. And how do I get up to speed, right? How I have no idea how that is supposed to work. And also, of course, the discovery is really bad because the rooms they recommend me, super weird.
There's everybody on there, right? And I've been like exploring around rooms and like, I thought when I got on it, this was just gonna be business. I'm like, no, this isn't just business. It's like everything. Like, there's like weird stuff. There's like people doing these like bachelor game shows on there. And I'm like, yeah, it's like everything. And the discovery is not great. I agree with you.
And did you ever talk in a room?
No, I've never had the opportunity to either host or like be brought onto the speaker panel or whatever. I haven't done that yet.
Yeah, I'm too shy to ever raise my hand. But I talked exactly once and it was really by accident because I entered a room and it was super small. It was just three people and it was one person I knew, Mike Rubini, and he immediately grabbed me before I could leave and pushed me onto the stage and then, hey, Jacob, what's going on? Okay, now I have to talk. So, and it was really like meeting someone in the hallway, right? So, and this was actually fun. Because it was really just eventually the two of us talking and we just ran into each other spontaneously. So I enjoyed that, but yeah, I absolutely don't think that it will work. It's currently just hype. And
like the one interesting thing is like if I follow people that I like and like that, the only shot for me to go back on there now is if I follow somebody that I like and they're going to do like a thing and I'll be like, okay, cool. I'll go listen to you talk because I don't have any other medium to like hear your thoughts beyond like Twitter or like a podcast or something. But if I could choose to listen to you on a podcast or on Clubhouse, I'll choose the podcast. So like it's sort of my last form of like I'll take your content here. And I don't think that's where you want to be as a content driven app. You don't want to be like the bottom of the barrel. I guess I'll go there.
Yeah. And did you ever use Blab? So there's a thing.
I've heard the comparisons. Of course, like Sean talks about it a little bit.
Because I also never even heard of it and living here far away from the US. But I understood the appeal of it after watching one video where Martin Shkreli, like the farmer bro, right? And he was kind of famous on there and he was doing these lectures. He was giving lectures on chemistry, I think, on finance. And this was a format I totally understand. Like people giving a lecture and then people can ask questions live. That makes perfect sense. And it's fun to watch. And I mean, they even had video, which helps a lot if you're talking to strangers, I think, because if it's just a voice, whatever, I think video really helps. So long story short, I think if Blab didn't work, Clubhouse definitely will not work because Blab was better.
Yeah, I agree. And That is an interesting point that like there is something that is valuable about having this in the moment Q&A and like getting to do it off the top. So I don't want to like completely ignore that. I just don't think that it's enough to overweigh all of the negatives to it.
But what is still interesting, of course, is that even if you don't believe that it will be a success, you can make a lot of money, or a little bit of money from it. And there, if every time like a new platform, whatever, blows up, there are lots of new opportunities. And I don't know if you saw this, but like on Reddit, this Clubhouse invites subreddit
Did see that, yeah.
exploded. Yeah. And the guy who started it, really smart, also, yeah, he followed like the unbundling of Reddit playbook. So he launched a separate website where you could like buy the Clubhouse invites directly from him for $30 a piece,
Yeah.
and he actually sold it on Flippa for 10K.
Dude, get your money. That's it. That is fascinating, right? That he capitalized on an opportunity quickly and then just flipped it. I love it, man. That's smart.
Yeah, I totally agree. That's really an amazing story.
Like, cool. I could just go get a bunch of people who want this thing. I don't know if this thing's gonna last, so I'm just gonna flip it, and then it'll be somebody else's problem.
Really, really fascinating. Okay, then let's talk about your next idea.
Okay, this one is a little more half-baked, but it comes from a. So I worked at like a startup accelerator in Lincoln, Nebraska. And for those of you who aren't familiar, it's like, I don't know. You could call it like a micro VC fund where you're putting like 50K into a company, helping them for 3 months, and then, you know, sending them off in the world. Hopefully, you sort of like making a return on your investment because you get equity in exchange for that 50K. So while I was there, I was super in touch with like the startup scene, which was pretty non-existent because it was Lincoln, Nebraska. But there was a company that did something super interesting that I think more people should do, and you could create a whole like sort of business out of this. I'm gonna butcher some of the naming of it because I don't even remember what it's called, but like basically this entrepreneur, he went around and raised a bunch of money from investors and said, I'm going to build a business out of IP that comes out of universities, because in most cases, universities have some really, really interesting tech, but they don't actually do anything with it. It's just for like research purposes, and it just sits on their shelves of like, oh yeah, we like figured this thing out. We have the IP for it, but like we're not going to do anything with it. Like it just is here, right? So he went on this tour for, I don't know what it was, 6 months to a year, looking at all this interesting IP from universities with the intent to buy some of it and then flip it, and not flip it, but turn it into a company. So this is sort of where the idea comes from. And what ended up happening with this company is wildly successful. I think they figured out something where they can turn like carbon into something else. I don't know. It was this like sciencey thing, and they crushed it. Multiple millions of dollars a year in revenue very quickly. You know, I thought it was like, wow, this is a really interesting way that you went about building this business. So the idea is, if you were a researcher or maybe a business type person who was interested in figuring out if IP was commercializable, creating your own sort of like brokerage or marketplace where you're vetting out this IP and being like, oh, I think this is a really, really great commercializable opportunity. I am going to share this with people, and then I will take a cut if people sort of, I will help broker the deal with the university and take a cut of however much it is. And in some cases, these are like hundreds of thousands of dollars, if not more than that. So like there's real opportunity to be that middleman and actually get a piece of it. You could start it out as a newsletter where it's like, I don't know how you find this IP. I've never actually gotten that deep in the rabbit hole, but like, oh, here's just an I like the IP university IP newsletter of commercializable opportunities. Or it's just a website, right? Where you're just like putting everything on there and people can browse it. So anyway, that's the idea.
Yeah, it sounds really smart, and especially like the last turn, starting really small with a newsletter, because I'm pretty sure you can find a lot if you just know how to what to search for. So because universities they have to register patents like everyone else, right? So and these
Exactly.
are public, and I don't know how exactly they publish it and whatever, but I think they are public, and you can just, if you know how to read them, there's a lot of value, and especially if you can like act as the translator between these worlds and
That's, I
find.
think, the real value there. It's like if you're just being the curator of here's a really good opportunity versus one that's like probably not great, I think that's where you could even make it a paid newsletter. You could, for like, you could just be a typical sort of like a Flippa or those other sites. What's the other one? Like Micro Acquire, where you have a free version, but if you want the paid version, you get like this IP 30 days before anybody else, right? I really like the idea. I think the challenge though is like educating people potentially on the opportunity of buying IP and turning that into a company, right? Like, I think that there might be a gap there between how people think about that and what's possible.
Yeah, definitely. But like Zempower just shared the most public and the most popular of their newsletters. Did you see that? So, and at I think at the 10, at spot number 10, there was this newsletter where they shared the expired patents.
Oh, right. Yeah. I saw the expired patents. Yeah.
And I also saw that this was one of their best ideas that they ever shared. And it goes in a similar direction.
Right.
I think, right? It's also, but instead of, expiring patents are easier because you don't need to buy them, whatever.
Right.
It's probably already clear how to monetize them because someone has done it. And I think, I honestly also think that you could turn this into a separate newsletter itself, 100%. Right? These expiring patents.
There's a guy who runs a newsletter I know called Patent Drop. I think it's what it's called. Patent. I think, it's Patent Drop. I think what he does, it's new patents though. So in this one, it's here are the new patents that big tech companies are, and he's been doing it for a little while, are putting out. But I think you could do it the other way too. Like here are the patents that just got expired. There's a company called Patent Watch. I have no idea how much money they make. Okay, Drug Patent Watch. It's like, it looks, they rebranded. It looked super gross like 6 months ago when I was looking at this. I think it's the same site. My understanding of what they did is they would like give you all of the intelligence around drug patents because like, I don't know, maybe Trends covered this, but like you look at like Roman and Keeps and Hims and all these ones where it's like, they just like, I think the generic version of finasteride or whatever the hair loss drug is opened up and they're like, cool, we can now like D2C the shit out of this or something like that. And I'm wondering like what other drugs could you do that with that I just have no clue, right? Because like I'm not privy to any of this. That same thing with expired drug patents.
That's really fascinating. And they are charging $2,000 a month.
Stupid expensive. I knew it was very, very expensive. And I have no idea if they're doing well, but it looks like they're mostly working with big companies. I don't know. But yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah, it seems to be working. So.
Yeah.
And also like Patent Drop has 7,000 subscribers. So yeah, he shared it in his latest newsletter.
Oh, okay. I don't think I've even read it, but that's pretty cool. They haven't been doing it for that long, I don't think. That's dope.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was my other one is that I think that you could do something with university IP and flip that turn that into a company. And then if you do something that helps with that, I think there's money to be made.
I love it. That is really a great idea. And like alone, start thinking about patents because there's a lot of money to be made, as is demonstrated by this pharma patent, drug patent watch, but also there's lots of interest as demonstrated by Patent Drop, the Substack newsletter. And I'm pretty sure if we would dig in a bit deeper, that's a lot of stuff going on. And yeah, what you describe is certainly a very interesting angle. But you need a lot of expertise, of course. I don't think you can pull it off as a complete outsider unless you're willing to spend months studying whatever you need to study. I'm not even sure because you need to understand patent laws probably, but also the tech. And maybe you would need to focus on a specific type of tech because there's huge differences because, what kind of patents do you
Like that would be tough to navigate. And then you need to figure out the business side of it, right? Like, could this actually be a business or is it just cool tech, right? And like, all of that, it does sound very difficult. But if you've got like this weird intersect of knowledge, really interesting.
Yeah, it's only technical risk, no market risk. So if you can pull it off,
right,
you get rich. I think we can stop here and maybe keep the rest. So I wanted to talk about AppSumo, but we can do it like next time. That won't run away. And also a few other ideas. I really enjoy our conversation. And every time it helps me like clarify my own thoughts on
topics. Yeah, dude, I'm the same way. I find that it's easier for me to talk about this stuff than it is sometimes to write about it. And so like, yeah, this is, I've been thinking a lot about doing this. So I've recorded a couple podcasts with my buddy and I'm trying to like get a slew of people on, but I'm using it more for like mid funnel. So here's my strategy. It's like, I've already got like an okay size audience, like 4,400 people on my newsletter. What I want to do is create the podcast as like another value add to them. But ultimately, I think my goal with it is to use it sort of as a nice segue into an upsell for the bootcamp, right? Where it's like, oh, now you know me in a capacity that isn't just in written form. You get a sense for my personality, how I talk about things, more of my stream of conscious and less of my like just written thoughts. And I think that would be really cool as a value add to them, as well as an easy segue into, oh, like I want to work with this guy even closer. So we'll see. The reason why I mentioned that though is I would love to have you on as well. And then you can get some cross promo to my audience immediately from that. So I'll hit you up though. It'll probably be in the next week or two. And then, you know, whatever works for you, we can find time.
Yeah, perfect. So another question, what's the name of your podcast?
I don't know. I'm probably just going to be super generic. It's like the Brainstorms podcast or something.
Yeah.
I'm still noodling on that one.
Yeah. So looking forward to that. Definitely send it my way. And I would love to have you again.
Cool, man. Well, dude, thanks for having me on again. I appreciate it. I'll be back. This is fun. If you need anything, I might hit you up about that product hunt stuff. But if you need anything from me, always just shoot me a DM. I'll get back to you quickly.
I will. Yeah, thank you. Okay, cool. Then have a nice day.
All right. See you.
Bye-bye.